The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 709. It's the 13th of February 2017. On the podcast today, I have Greg Kunzel, Managing Director of Georgian Mining Corporation, that's GEO, covers today's news regarding the significant drill intercepts at Kavimba Bolnizi. Also on the podcast, Colin Hutchinson, CEO of Ascent Resources, ASD, answering private investor questions after the weekend's fundraise. Also on the podcast, Jerry Randall, CEO of Venture Life Group, that's VLG ticker, goes over their trading update for the year ended 2016. I also have, as always, the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs released via our platform this morning.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Greg Kunzel, Managing Director of Georgian Mining Corporation. That's GEO ticker. Good morning, Greg.
Good morning, Justin. How are you today?
Yeah, good, thanks. And thanks for catching up with us. I know you're in an airport right now, flying off to exotic climes, I expect.
Heading to the site. Just to get out there to catch up on what's happening with the drilling and other work that we've got ongoing.
Yeah, well, I had an RNS out today. It's been received very well by the market. I'm looking at the share price up 10%. So we'll go through that in a bit. For people not aware of Georgian Mining Corporation, give us a brief summary, Greg, as to what you're all about, please.
Georgian Mining Corporation, we have a 50% JV on an 860 square kilometre license area in Georgia. We have a lot of the area's been drilled extensively historically. We have a local partner who is operating two mines, one copper gold mine and a gold heap leach mine. We have a priority target at Kavimba Bolnizi that we've now done quite a reasonable amount of drilling on. We announced an initial resource of just under a million tons at just under a percent about 2 weeks ago now. And today we've announced the first three drill holes in a 10,000 metre drill hole program that's aimed at putting together a 3 to 5 million tonne resource at Kavimba Bolnizi. For us to be able to utilise our local partners' excess capacity in both the copper processing plant, the float plant, and the gold heap leach.
Yeah, well, this news obviously been well received here. It's up 11.43% of share price at 9.75 as I speak. And the RNS is entitled Significant Drill Intercepts at Kavimba Bolnizi. So take us through some of the figures there, Greg. Why is the market liking this?
The first three drill holes, two of which were completed just before Christmas and one after, have shown some very, very significant, particularly copper intercepts. The highlight KD011 is almost 114 metres at 1.7%, mm-hmm. which I think is an exceptional copper intercept. But more importantly, the mineralisation starts from close to surface from only 18 metres. Within that, there's obviously some very high grade areas as well, running up around 2.5 to 3%. A very, very exciting intercept for us, one that we think is going to significantly enlarge the resource that we've announced to date. KED08, again, 30 metres at 1.6%. The grade is particularly very encouraging. These are big mineable widths. The grade is good. And I think the most important thing to note is we're currently only targeting a 1% average copper rate here for our initial resource. That's the target that's been set for us with guidance from our partner as to what they can take in their plant. So the fact that we're getting results well up above a percent now is very encouraging for the company.
Yeah, and it seems like at the moment copper, very hot, you know, commodity to be into because you've got the strike there, you know, in Chile, and there's other things going on. So it's doing well. The price of copper is rising there, and so you've got a further 17 drill holes being completed, have they?
We do. Look, important to note that the results announced today, we've got three targets at Kabemba Bolonese at the moment. Yeah. One is a copper gold zone, and that's the three results that were announced today are in relation to that copper gold zone. Now, that's also the area that we announced the initial resource of 947,000 tonnes at 0.94% copper a couple of weeks ago. We also have two gold oxide zones, one to the northeast and one to the north. Now, we also announced an initial resource on those a couple of weeks ago. We've got work ongoing there as well, drilling and trenching, and we're looking forward to updating the market on those results as well. So it's quite exciting. We've got the copper target, which we're obviously looking to feed through to the float plant at Manuli, and then we have the gold oxide targets that can go off to one of two heap leaches. So, as you mentioned, copper and gold quite hot at the moment, and we've got both. So it's very exciting for the company.
Yeah, and has this turned out to be as exciting a prospect as you thought it was going to be?
Look, we always have a high level of confidence in Kabemba Bolonese, given some of the work that have been done to date, given the drilling that we undertook last year. I think what's most exciting, though, is the potential for this to be significantly larger. I mean, we are targeting a relatively modest first resource of 3 to 5 million tonnes. Now, that number is being driven by the fact that we've got a plant that can take up to 1 million tonnes a year. So we don't need to go out and drill up 10, 20, 30 million tonnes to start production. And I think that's a very key differentiating factor between Geo and a lot of other companies. We're able to look at what would typically be a smaller resource because we don't have significant amounts of capex or infrastructure to develop. We're able to, once we get to a mineable pit size, look at simply moving into production, given that we've got the plant 7 kilometres away from the target.
Yeah.
And I think it's also important to point out, these are the first three holes we have to date drilled, another seven. Half of those are currently at the lab being assayed. The other half are in country being prepped, ready to send to the lab. So there's another 17, probably 18, 19 by now, holes that are going to be ready to release to the market over the next few weeks and the coming months. So the next few steps will include an upgrade of the existing resource, additional drill results on the copper, drill results on the gold, an upgrade of the resource, and what we're also looking to do over the coming month or two is start putting in place an agreement with our partner for the offtake. So then we'll be able to talk to the market a little bit more confidently about the exact timings of the next steps.
Yeah, so obviously a news-rich period for you, Greg. So listen, if anyone's listening right now and they're thinking, OK, this sounds very good, and they need a bit more convincing as to why they should hit that follow button, could you give us three reasons to sum up, please, Greg, why someone should follow you on Vox Markets, please?
Sure. I guess we have the biggest one is the potential for near-term production as a result of the nearby processing plants owned and operated by our partner. I think the second is the grades we're achieving at the moment. I think they definitely back up what we believe in, that we're dealing with a mineral-rich copper-gold area here. And thirdly, the scalability. As I said, we're targeting an initial smaller resource, which will allow us to move into production quickly. But we also have the underlying potential here, given its proximity to Manuli, which has produced over 80 million tonnes over its life. I mean, we think ultimately we could be dealing with a 50 million tonne deposit sitting at Kabemba Bolonese. So we have the ability to start off small, and then we can grow it significantly as we continue to develop the project.
Yeah, okay. Well, thanks for taking time, and you're flying off in a bit to Georgia. Do you know what the temperature is there?
I suspect it's probably around freezing or just a little bit below. So not too different from London at the moment, to be honest.
Okay, well, have a nice trip. I hope you packed your thermals there, Greg, and look forward to speaking to you again when you get some more drill results out. Thanks very much, fella.
Great. Thanks for your time, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Colin Hutchinson, CEO of Ascent Resources at AST. Colin, thank you for joining me.
Thanks, Justin. It's great to be here.
Yeah, and it's quite short notice off the back of a request from private investors, actually, to come on the podcast, and they've submitted a lot of questions for you to answer. Okay, so we'll go through those in a bit. Before we get to that, Colin, could you give a brief summary as to what Ascent Resources is all about, please?
Sure, Justin. I mean, Ascent Resources, we're an AIM-listed oil and gas exploration production company. Our principal asset is the Petosavci field in northeastern Slovenia, which we have 75% of. We have plans to bring that asset into production in the very near future, hopefully selling gas before the end of March. And we completed a placing this morning for about £3 million, which I think a lot of the questions will be related to.
Yeah, okay. Question one, why are you recompleting a well PG-11A at this time when you've said well PG-10 is going to produce more gas than required for the ENA contract?
Sure. PG-10 does give us more gas than we need to satisfy the minimum requirement under that ENA contract. But at the same time, if we recomplete PG-11, we have more gas, we can send more gas to ENA, we can get more revenue. So it's always better to have two wells than one. Recompleting PG-11, it's on a different sand horizon to PG-10. It's about a couple of kilometres away, so it gives us much more data in terms of what the reservoir does and how the wells perform. So, I mean, this first phase of development, the recompleting the first two wells and selling gas to ENA, it's as much about acquiring data on the reservoirs and the wells as it is about generating revenue. So, two wells are better. We could have supplied ENA on one well, but it's better, it's safer to have two wells. It gives us more gas, it gives us more data.
Yeah, I should say ENA rather than INA. Okay, question two. Any idea what Henderson are planning to do with their shares and the remaining convertible loan notes?
Short answer is no, I don't know. They don't tell me what they're going to do. We don't discuss that. Henderson have supported the company since 2012, since before I came along. They've put, I think, somewhere around £12 million into the company over the last number of years. And they put in money very recently as well. I mean, they participated in the last placing, and people have seen the shares coming, the increase in investment around October, November time. So they've been very supportive. They've obviously sold CLNs recently. They've reduced their position. I think at one point on a fully diluted basis, they were up over 70% of the company. So they've now brought that down to a much more manageable level. And long term, I'd hope that they continue to be a supportive shareholder.
Okay. Question three is, why was the RNS, this is about the fundraise, released after hours on Friday when it suddenly happened, please? Why hasn't the placement done a couple of weeks ago when the share price was much higher?
The reason for doing it sort of after hours on a Friday and the reason that the timing as to when it's come along is we became aware on Friday that there was an appetite there for people to participate. We had the offer to underwrite the placing at £3 million. It was done after hours because it gave people the whole weekend then to consider the proposals, consider the offer, and to participate. And we had a lot of people, a lot of private investors, and a fair amount of institutional investors coming in over Saturday and Sunday, I was involved in Saturday and Sunday, spent a lot of time answering questions from shareholders about the placing. So I think it was good to close it after hours on a Friday and give people 2 days to consider before we had to close it before the market reopened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Could you give a rough estimate of revenue over the coming year?
It's difficult to estimate revenue at the moment. I know what the minimum requirement on the ENA contract is, and I know I can satisfy that with PG-10 and some way above that. If I get PG-11, or when I get PG-11 recompleted now, that significantly increases the volume of gas I can send to ENA. So until both wells are producing, it's difficult to give a revenue forecast, but having the extra well definitely increases what that potential revenue is.
Yeah. Next question is about, is there any money left over to pay back Henderson and the CLNs there?
Yeah, I've had quite a few questions about the CLNs, about why don't we repay them? And I've had people suggest that I go to a bank and borrow £6.5 million and repay Henderson, which would be fabulous if a bank was prepared to lend money to a pre-revenue company on the basis of their assets. But that isn't the way that banking works now. Maybe if several years ago you would have got a £6.5 million loan. I'd obviously love to pay back CLNs. We have some cash now. Potentially one thing we could do with it. Borrowing money to repay the CLNs becomes more of a possibility, in my opinion, once you're cash flow positive, once you've proved that the reservoir contains significant potential. Then borrowing $6.5 million becomes a much more easier proposition, and that would allow me then to repay the CLNs comfortably.
Yeah. How far off is the IPPC permit?
I remain hopeful that we hear something back on the IPPC permit soon. Based on timings previously, we had the positive result from the Environment Agency back in, I think it was November, where they said that we didn't need to do preliminary screening, or we did the preliminary screening, and they said we didn't need to do a full environmental impact assessment. That was really good news, because the environmental impact assessment is a very long process and duplicates a lot of what we'd already done with the original IPPC application. So that would have allowed us to get the permit straight away. It was obviously appealed again by this NGO that appeals against everything that we do and most of what goes on again in the country. The decision will be made by the Environment Minister next to basically confirm the decision that her civil servants have made. Hopefully that happens soon. It's typically been around 3 months from the appeal to the decision in the past, so I'd be hopeful to hear sooner rather than later.
Okay. Question 7 is, private investors get worried about death spiral financing, the sort of thing Darwin get involved with. Surely this is the final placing now and no need to take on any more debt?
Yes, I mean, just to be clear, what we've done over the weekend, it's a £3 million, or the guts of £3 million placing. It's not debt. None of it's gone to Darwin. Primary Bid facilitated the placing. We used their platform. Their platform was worked very well, as far as I could see. Was able to process all the requests from investors. But it's not. There's no money gone to Darwin. We're not. There's no convertibles out to Darwin. There's nothing like that. I had a few concerned questions over the weekend about that, so I just want to make that crystal clear that Darwin aren't holding any shares, and there's not going to be any convertibles put into the market as other companies have done.
Yeah, so where's Darwin come from? The name Darwin come from in regards to this?
Darwin is involved with Primary Bid.
Oh, okay.
Bid are part of Darwin.
Okay, right. Question 8. How does the prospective contract signing this weekend between Slovenia and Russia affect Ascent Resources?
There isn't much impact. Again, I heard that one come through from people over Twitter, I think, over the weekend. There's not any significant impact as far as I can see. Russia sell a lot of gas into Slovenia at the minute. That's not going to change with this new contract. I think there'll always be significant demand for Slovenian gas, which can be produced locally, and there'll be less transportation put into the grid. And our partner Petrol owns infrastructure and part of that distribution network in country, so I don't have any concerns about that agreement at all.
Okay, final two questions. Please can you explain the timing of this fundraising? The last rise was in October, was supposed to provide sufficient funding through to gas sales and the redevelopment of PG11A. Have those funds been overused, or is there something more urgent that requires immediate funding?
No, I mean, there's not really any. There wasn't a pressing need to go out and raise money, which is always a good time to actually raise money, because in the past we've raised money whenever we've been sort of down to our last few cents, and you don't get a terribly good deal when you do that, and it's a difficult thing to do. We raised money in October. That money was designed to take us through the first gas. That money would have taken us through the first gas, and there's still, we raised $4.5 million in October. We used about $1 million, just under 900,000, to pay down debt at that time. So we've paid off nearly £1 million of debt. recently. That was the more expensive, the repayable on-demand debt, which we got rid of at that point. That left us with $3.6 million to bring the field through to production. I've still got the majority of that cash left in the bank account. I could still get through to first gas with it, but it's tighter. Having more money in the bank makes it much easier to make good decisions. You have options. You don't have to go with the cheapest possible supplier. You can go with the better supplier, the guy you want to work with. You can get maybe better lead times on equipment if you can pay a little bit more. And it just gives you a bit more security. I mean, oil and gas is an inherently unpredictable environment. We've seen that with PG-10. PG-10, the recompletion was going very quickly, and then we ran into some difficulties, and it took a bit longer than we thought. So having extra cash in the bank just makes the company so much more stable. And getting to first gas now is no longer as difficult as it would have been trying to do it with the more limited funds that I had before this placing. Because PG-10 ran on a bit longer than expected. So whenever I raised the money back in October, you look at what your sort of best case and worst case is for the different things you need to do for PG-10, PG-11, the CPP. PG-10, it did cost a little bit more than expected. I could still do PG-11 if it came in towards the lower end, but I'm not going to risk that. So I would have gone to first gas with PG-10, brought in some cash, and then done PG-11. But it's a more difficult way to do things, to sort of do things piecemeal. It'd be nice now, I can start to talk to service companies, get everything organized to do the PG-11 recompletion as soon as possible, get another flow test, shows the gas is there, shows everything's good, and have more gas to sell to Ina. So I think the cash, it wasn't required. I wasn't out desperately looking for it. The opportunity arose, and I think what it gives the company is significant.
Yeah. So essentially, it's a financial buffer that'll, you know, cover all sort of eventualities and, you know, gives you more options, essentially. Yes. Okay. Question 10. What are the plans in relation to field development in the next 12 months or so? Do you have any sales contracts being discussed to supply gas into the national grid this year?
I mean, gas into the national grid is really our long-term solution for the field. This deal with Ina is designed to last for a year or two while we get everything ready to sell into the grid. We've obviously done a lot of preparatory work to get ourselves in the position to do that. The last thing we need really is this IPPC permit, and then we're ready to hit the button and start to buy equipment. So we've already got contracts to construct the metering station that's required to put the gas into the national grid. We've had all those discussions. As I mentioned, our partner Patrol is heavily involved in the grid network, so getting an offtake agreement finalised won't be a significant issue. So the plan would be once we have that IPPC permit, I think I need around 12 months from getting that permit to having the plant purchased, installed and commissioned and ready to go. So we're ready to produce. As soon as we get that permit, we can hit the button and we can be producing into the grid within around 12 months.
Marvellous. All right, Carl, I'm just looking at the top five most followed lists here. You are the most followed last 30 days on Vox. But for people not following you, can you give us three reasons why they should?
Yes, Justin, three reasons. I mean, I think the company's at a very exciting point in its development, and the last 6 to 9 months have been transformational. What's happened now is we've got the PG-10 flow test. We've shown that we have the gas in the ground. Secondly, we have the ENA contract. We have a market for our gas. And that's for a long time been the issue with the development. We have no market, and now we have a market to sell the gas. And the last point, I guess, over the weekend, we've raised £3 million. So we've now demonstrated that there's significant investor support and interest in the company. And we've put an extra £3 million in the bank account. So we have the cash. We're a stable company. We're not going to go anywhere. We've got enough funds to get through to production, to take the field forward, and to really build on the successes that we've had over the last 6 to 9 months.
Marvellous. And I'm sure that'll move you up the list there, Col, because you're doing very well on the follow list. And I'm surprised the amount of questions we had submitted. But there's obviously a heck of a lot of interest there in Ascent Resources. And thanks for coming in at short notice to answer the questions, Col. And look forward to speaking to you again soon, fella.
Thanks, Justin. It's always a pleasure.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Jerry Randall, CEO of Venture Life, and that's VLG ticker. Jerry, thank you for coming back on.
You're very welcome. It's a pleasure, Justin.
And I don't know how late in the year we can say Happy New Year, because the last time I spoke to you, I suppose it was mid-November, and we haven't spoken since, but you were saying there, you were guiding forward, saying we're looking forward to some good trading updates or revenue, and you've had a nice trading update. We'll go into that in a bit, but before we go into the details of that, can you, as always, give a summary as to what the business is all about, please, Jerry?
Sure. Venture Life is a healthcare business. We focus on self-care, so that's products where you as a consumer will go to the pharmacy, you will choose the product yourself, pay for the product yourself, and medicate yourself with the product. We sell in over 40 countries around the world. We have our own development and manufacture in Italy, our own commercial partnering and alliance management business in the UK. And we've got strong growing revenues because our operating leverage is very good. We've got a fixed overhead base and we're driving more and more revenue through that, so we're beginning to see better gross margin and a lot of that dropping through to the bottom line.
And so how many products do you have at the moment, Jerry?
So we have 16 brands in the portfolio, and we also sell a number of products under the existing owner's brand as well.
Okay, and you say you manufacture many of these?
Yes, well, 95% of the revenue we generate is manufactured in our own factory. So the bit that isn't is capsules, because we don't make those ourselves, but all the liquids we make, sell, are all made in our factory in Italy.
Okay, well, let's go. You had a pre-close trading update on the 26th of January, and it looks quite good. The headlines here, revenue up 57% year on year. And
yes.
In fact, I'll leave you to the honours. So take us through some of the highlights, please, Jerry.
Sure, yeah. We're really pleased because we've got a revenue of 14.3 million for the calendar year 2016, as you say, up 57% compared to the previous year. And that's a combination of an acquisition we made in March of 2016, but also strong organic growth across the rest of our business. So we're delighted with that. And we're going to be reporting our first full year of EBITDA profit. We haven't reported that yet because our results will be out on the 23rd of March, but we'll be reporting that first full year of EBITDA profit. And also we finished the year with £2 million of cash in the balance sheet. So, yeah, delighted with the results and obviously happy to tell people about that more on the 23rd of March.
Yeah, well, it's fundamentally looking strong. Like I said, it's, you know, excellent growth there. And I don't know if you ever look at a chart, but I'm always looking at a chart because I get sort of technical analysts on the podcast daily and I learn more and more about it. But it's almost a chart now is starting to reflect, you know, fundamentally the business, which it should do, of course. And you see, it's sort of bottoming out. And I was trying to talk to you before we came on here about something called a 200-day moving average. I mean, people listen to podcasts on a regular basis know about these technical sort of indicators. But essentially, in a simplified term, if the price is above this 200-day moving average, it's normally a good sign. And yours popped above it at end of last year, and then it dipped below it, and I can see a bit of selling action there, but then it's popped above it again. And so this looks good. It looks like it's bottoming out, and I'm sure I'm going to get a technical analyst to look at this in the morning. But I'm sure this, it looks like a good sign. It looks like, you said, the business there is getting stronger, going towards EBITDA positive. And like I said, one thing held it down, Barry, a little dip on a sell. And are you aware of a big sell there?
Yes, we had a shareholder who was an original investor when we very first started the company, so even before we came to the public market.
Okay.
He's quite an elderly gentleman, and you know, he wanted to liquidate his stock just for his own personal circumstances, quite elderly. And so we've now placed that into the hands of some nice, sticky retail investors. They've taken all of that stock. He's out completely, so that selling's done. And yeah, I agree with you. I think the share price has bottomed out. I mean, now we are twice the company we were 2 years ago and half the price. So
yeah,
the proposition for an investor is much better now. And I'm very interested in that technical analysis because it's nothing I know about, but it sounds very positive.
Yeah, well, I'll get someone onto that. But it's almost like saying to that investor, hang on, buddy, you were selling at exactly the wrong time. You've managed to almost pick the bottom here and you're selling. That's when to hold on or accumulate, you know, it's not when to sell. It's obviously doing it the wrong way round. But there we are.
It is. I mean, he's been a great long-term supporter of the business, and through his own personal circumstances,
yeah,
he needs to realise the cash now. So that's fine. He's made good money, and you know, it's we've now moved them into the hands of some people ready to support us through the next stage of the business. So we're very happy with that.
Excellent. So you got obviously your final results out coming out. What was the date of that, Jerry, again?
23rd of March.
Okay. And of course, it's looking strong. And going forward, I mean, are you seeing trade and business doing well?
Yeah, we've had a good start to the year. As you said in the trading update, our order book for January this year was well ahead of our actual sales for January last year. Good prospects. Our customers are ordering well. Very happy with the business. We've got some good initiatives in the UK for our Ultradex brand. We've got new deals coming along. We're doing a lot of work on new international partnerships. So, yeah, very happy. The business is really flying at the moment. And, we'd be delighted if the share price does the same.
And with, you being in different continents and stuff, how has the weak pound and stuff affected you? What's happened there?
Well, the majority of our revenues, about 75% of our revenues are in euros, and similarly 75% of our costs are, so that's quite naturally hedged. We do have about 25% that's in sterling, and we have 25% of our costs in sterling. So as far as trading outside of the UK, no impact at all, really. In the UK, we manufacture products that we sell in the UK, and that obviously, therefore, the weakened pound has been against that. But that particular product was the one we acquired last year, which we've now taken in-house to manufacture, and we've reduced the cost. So the savings you made through that process far outweigh any sort of small impact on currency movement between Europe and the UK.
Yeah, it must be nice to start a new year and realise that you've got quite an optimistic year ahead of you, is it?
Yeah, we've spent the last couple of years really investing in the business, not just financially, but in terms of effort, in terms of new products. And we've just announced in our update three new products that we're launching this year. That's the fruit of 2016. So we've got a product for onychomycosis, nail fungus, which is going to be a subject of a patent application. We've got a new product for photosensitivity for people who take a lot of heavy sort of cardio drugs and antibiotics, and that's a patented product. And we've got a great new product for rosacea, an inflammatory skin disease. So we're going into the year with three new strong products, two of which will be under patent protection, going into the marketplace, which are not reflected in our analyst forecasts at all at the moment. So on top of our organically growing business, our really strong Ultradex trade, we've got three new products that we're going to be taking out into the marketplace this year. So we're very optimistic, and the business is moving very well.
Marvellous. Well, Jerry, on the podcast, every day I highlight the five most followed companies from the last 24 hours. And this is basically a measure of interest, almost a measure of money, of people sort of following these companies. And we find that, people follow end up doing some research and maybe investing. So what I want to do now is if you could give, three reasons why someone who isn't following you should hit that follow button on your page, please.
Sure. I mean, I think the very first comment, which I've already said in the podcast, is compared with 2 years ago, we're twice the company and half the price. So as an investment proposition, much better. We've now moved through into that position of making EBITDA profit. So we've now crossed the line of being a loss-making company to a profit-making company. And because of our operational gearing, our fixed overheads, virtually all of that new gross margin we get from increasing revenue is dropping through to the bottom line. So you're going to get a nice pull-up in the future profit generation of the business. And I think finally, we're in a fantastic space. We're in the space for the aging population, people getting older, having to self-medicate, more and more and more. You're seeing it this country, seeing it abroad. So it's an absolutely topical market position to be in.
Yeah. Well, Jerry, thanks for that. But keep an eye on your page on Vox Markets, because the next few days I'll get our technical analyst to look at the chart, and I'm sure she'll have some good things to say about it. But in the meantime, Jerry, thanks for chatting to us, and look forward to chatting to you again in the not-too-distant future.
Thanks very much, Justin. I look forward to seeing the chart too.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Oil and Gas Sector Authority, Malky. Morning, Malky. You all right, fella?
Yeah, very well, and thanks, Justin, and yourself.
Yeah, well, I'm quite happy because quite a few of the stocks I own are in the green, so or in the blue, So that's always a nice start to a Monday morning, I think,
Excellent, excellent.
Right, so what are we looking at today, Malky? Which stocks are you looking at?
I'm looking at SDX, Hurricane and Faro this morning.
Cool. Okay, fire away. SDX, what's happening there?
Well, SDX, as you know, it's a big favourite of mine, and recent corporate activity where they raised money from buying most of Circle Oil, that's Egypt and Morocco. But the reason I'm calling it at the moment is that we've got very exciting times imminent, and could be very imminent. They're drilling in Egypt in a place called South Dessouk. They're drilling any time now. We had an announcement a couple of weeks ago, I think, saying that that all of the service companies have been signed up, This rig is due on site. I think I know that they've determined a place for it to drill, and so they've got the rig ready, and I'm expecting a fairly imminent spud date. Now, this is an exciting well. They carried on it. It could be an absolute, you know, fantastic well. Now, people shouldn't get too excited, but when I tweeted at the weekend, what should I talk about today? The STX fan club is alive and well, and getting excited about this well. I think that they're right to be excited, but it is only obviously an exploration well, but very exciting times for STX Energy.
Okay. And next one then is Hurricane, and I often have a chat with Alistair Stobie, CFO there, and always quite positive, and always seem to be releasing just positive news upon positive news.
It doesn't stop at the moment. So they announced last week an update on the Lancaster prospect, which they've evaluated further information from the two wells there. And as you say, it gets better and better. I mean, the position here, very positive news on reserves. The oil water contact is better than expected. And they've got a CPR coming up for the company soon, but I'm expecting that number. Even they said in their announcement last week that there would be the 300 million barrels they've got in for that is conservative. And I'm sure that's extremely conservative, so we got a lot there. Clearly, signs that that is particularly good. And there are one or two other real pointers there. The reserves figure. I mean, they've drilled a lot of the prospects up now, which is interesting because they've managed to find out what's where. And so it looks like Lancaster and Halifax are separated from Lincoln and Warwick. And by this Brynhild fault, which means that Lincoln and Warwick is going to be a single accumulation, which is fantastic news. And of course, they've had successful wells on both those. Lancaster and Halifax will be on the other side. Halifax is drilling at the moment. I would expect news from Halifax well quite soon. Depending on what they've got down there and what the weather's like and so on, but that would be positive. Certainly, if it means that if it's anything like the other wells, I think that there are two things here people should watch out for. There's a farm-in process is going to be restarted with big boys only need apply here, because there's no reason for Hurricane to farm out to somebody who isn't going to be able to or want to develop a big prospect. And the second thing is I just don't think the press or the market or even the investors realise quite how big this could be. Mm. The CPR coming out, we've got the FID, the final investment decision, which is due by the end of the first half, so there's not long to go for that. Potential farming probably by a big boy. I just think that 54p, somebody sent me a text on Friday saying, have you updated your asset value or your target price? Well, it was 100p, Justin. Mm-hmm. But to be honest, I think that could be way out if these come right. Obviously, people worry about whether these fractured basements drain properly and so on. But they've got a number of absolutely monster prospects here. And I just think that the market hasn't quite got the hang of it. I mean, obviously, they worry about the fact that it's going to, you know, we're going after this this well, Halifax well is drilling at the moment, they're going to go into development phase. But that's what the farm out's for. So, you know, I just think that there's potentially massive good news on the way still from Hurricane.
Yeah, it's funny. Whenever I get anyone on from a company, I ask them to give us three reasons why someone should follow them. And one of the reasons Alistair gave is we've got a lot of oil and we just found more. And I quite like that. But it's nice that he was in a location last time I spoke to him abroad. He couldn't reveal where it was. But obviously, as he's a CFO, you know, doing in discussions with these kind of farm out things, you know. And so very interesting times there for the company. All right. And the last one, was it Pharaoh, you're saying?
It is Pharaoh, actually, because this is one of the better stocks in the bucket list last year and remains in the bucket list this year. It's obviously a bit bigger than one to the others, but They gave an update on Friday, which was extremely positive. You know, if you're a holder, the reason I'm talking about it is that, you know, if you're a holder of Thera, you can sleep easy at night because this is one of the best managements in the sector. They've got some fantastic prospects, which they're working up in Norway. They've got a very strong balance sheet. They've just refinanced with a 10 banks, and they're looking in a very strong position. My guess is that, as I say, they're picking up on their exploration program. They've got some decent, very decent acreage in the most recent licensing round from the Norwegians, and that decent licensing round has produced some short and long-term prospects. So you should be very happy on that front if you're a holder. My guess is that this is going to take over from Ithaca when that goes out in the next few weeks. If it does, I strongly believe that Ithaca are being sold out on the cheap. But if Faro sort of picks up the mantle as being, you know, the best managed strong company in the sector, that's good for everybody. Ironically, Delek have a holding in this one as well, 13% I think it is. So they should watch out for that. But there's nothing wrong with a little bit of potential takeover activity to keep the management on its toes and all spiced up. The point I'm trying to make here is everything is going incredibly well for Faro, very strongly financed, exciting wells on the go, best explorer in the sector probably by on percentages, and production coming through in a number of key areas. So very happy with Faro, which is one of the most positive the bucket list stocks, as you know.
Yeah, well, I just saw a tweet, I think, on your bucket list and its returns. Well, very impressive. What were the returns you tweeted out, Marky?
Well, the bucket list last year was a dream. It couldn't have got any better. I wish I had. Of the 14 stocks, in total, they produced a return of 162%. Faro was actually in sixth position and 178%. Percent, which means to get into the top six, you have to be up by 108%. But you know, we had Ithaca up 500, and Hurricane both up over 500, Sound up by over 400, and Premier up 300. Tullo, 3 billion market cap company, up 200%. Faro, and you know, everything except the last couple, which were Rockhopper and Far, and they both have special situations. Where Rockhopper was only down a smidgen and 2% or something, and Far was down 12%. But that will come good when Senegal works out for them. It's worked out for Cairn already. Yeah, yeah. Very lucky. And one or two of the stocks that we've pumped into the new bucket list, like Aminex, are going like crazy. And another stock which is in there, which is just beginning to show signs, which I talked about last week, is Victoria Oil and Gas. So, you know, there's still a lot of excitement in the new bucket list, and we just got lucky last year, Justin, I think.
Yeah, well, I don't think so. I think if I was, it proves to me you know what you're talking about, Malky. And if I was people, I'd go onto Malky's blog right now and do some research on those stocks. Malky, thank you very much, fella. I look forward to chatting to you next week.
Yeah, I look forward to it. Bye now.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five. EVR Holdings, that's EVRH. At four, Amu Minerals, AMC. At three, Asia Met Resources, that's ARS. At two, I just had Colin on, Ascent Resources, AST. And number one, the most followed company on Vox Markets over the last 24 hours has been the People's Operator, TPOP, T-P-O-P, is ticker. I did write a blog about them on the weekend. I do hold some stock there, and I think they're going to have definitely an interesting 2017 ahead of them. And I had Mark Epstein, the CEO, on the podcast on Friday, of course. All right, here are the top five most liked RNSs on Vox Markets this morning. At five, MySquare, that's M-Y-S-Q, My Combo Hardcore Game Launch. At four, Nuog, or New Oil and Gas, completion of due diligence at EL1070. At three, Kefi Minerals, conditional fundraising to raise 5.62 million. At two, Georgian Mining Corporation, GEO, of course I had Greg on earlier, significant drill intercepts at Kavima Bolnizi. And number one, the most liked RNS on Vox Markets this morning, was from Ascent Resources. I've chatted to Colin earlier. AST is ticker. Successful fundraising of £3 million via primary bid. That's it for the podcast. Like I said, don't forget, everything you hear in this podcast is just information. It is not intended as investment advice. Thanks very much for listening. Much appreciate us.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.